Welcome to the show. Coming up, we'll have the latest on Carmelo Anthony getting traded to the Hawks. Plus, we'll discuss the latest NFL anthem controversy. Speak for Yourself starts now. Man, we got a great show planned today. Cats away, the mice will play. Hello and welcome. I'm Jason Whitlock. Colin Cowherd is off today, but I'm joined by Super Bowl champion Mark Schlereth, Pro Bowler T.J. Houshmandzadeh, and making his Speak for Yourself debut, the Steelers legend who I most wanted to play against. I would have killed James Harrison had I played in the NFL. All right, let's start in college football, where UNC head coach Larry Fedora showed up at yesterday's ACC Media Day and went off about a multitude of issues, including what he sees as a major threat to the sport of football.
I do believe we're involved in the greatest game there is on earth. I really do. And I do believe it's what makes our country so great. And I'm passionate about that. And the things that we change year in and year out and tweaking the game for player safety, all of those things, I think are good for the game. And I said it in there. I think the game is safer right now than it's ever been in the history of the game. That doesn't mean you're going to eliminate all the injuries. It's not possible. But the game is better than it's ever been. And I believe the game's under attack right now. I really do. And if we're not careful, you know, we're going to lose what the game is all about. I fear that the game will get pushed so far to one extreme that you won't recognize the game 10 years from now. That's what I worry about. And I do believe that if it gets to that point, that our country goes down too. I blame a groundswell of data that is tweaked one way or the other, because I can take the data and I can make it look one way, you can take the data and make it look another way. And whoever's presenting it is the one that gets to say so. And, are there some things that are negative about the game? Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But again, I think as you look over time, I can tell you just in my lifetime, from when I played the game early on to where we are today, here's a huge difference in the way the game is played and the way athletes are taken care of. A few years back, I had an opportunity to ask a three-star general, you know, what I had a question for him. I said, what is it that makes our country, our military, superior to every other military in the world? He was like, that's easy. We're the only football-playing nation in the world. You know, and he said, most of our troops have grown up, have played the game at some point in their life, at some level. And the lessons that they learn from that game is what makes us who we are.
Didn't take long for the pushback to start against Fedora's comments, with USA Today's Dan Wolken calling for his job, saying, quote, no need to dance around this. If Fedora actually believes what he said, he's too dumb to coach college football and should be fired immediately. It's one thing to be a know-nothing rube with no sense of perspective or understanding of American history. It's another to be a rube who is in charge of the well-being of 85 college students on scholarship and someone that denies the mountain of science that has linked head trauma in football to significant health problems later in life. All right, listen, I think Wolken's comments are idiotic and stupid. Larry Fedora has a right to have his opinion. And Larry Fedora has done more thinking about this issue, more research into this issue than all the people running their mouths in the media that really don't care about football and just looking for a talking point. Having said that, the only thing I'll blame Larry Fedora for, I wouldn't have rolled out this opinion at Media Day for the ACC. It's a soundbite. You have to present, when you're going against conventional wisdom mm-hmm. and whatever the group think is, you got to do it in a more strategic way than answering people's questions at a press conference and rattling off some sound bites that can be easily misconstrued. So I don't think the setting was the appropriate place for these comments.
All right. Well, Larry Fedora was salient in his points, and he's got the right to have that opinion, and he spent more time around football than any of the reporters that are criticizing him or any of the media that will criticize him for his opinion. Let me tell you the thing that really irritates me, and I get irritated about this. Football, the equation out there that we're told, and football has, for me, it's provided far more than it's ever taken. It's given me far more than it's ever taken.
29 surgeries.
Yes, and I'd do it all over again. But the equation seems to be football equals CTE equals early death, or you're going to kill your family. And that's the narrative that's pushed all the time. And you know what they don't look at? They don't look at the fact that guys retire and some guys put their identity in playing football. And when that identity is taken away from you, guess what? You fall into depression. How does that factor into the equation? How do guys that are stuck on and addicted to opiates, how does that fall into the equation? How about guys that abuse alcohol? How about guys that don't have a purpose when they're done playing? How about all those things that aren't being researched? Could those have an effect on your brain matter, your brain health? Because certainly, I believe that repeated concussions or repeated head trauma will probably create a situation where you have some injury, some CTE. But I also believe that your brain has enough elasticity, has enough connectivity to overcome some of those things. So why does not every guy die early with brain trauma? Why is Jerry Kramer going to be elected and inducted in the Hall of Fame? And he's 84 years old, and he's salient, and he's sharp, and I talk to him on a regular basis. Why? Because we don't look at anything but, oh, football causes CTE, and you're going to die. Run away, run away. And I think it's so selfish, and it's so short-sighted, and the science is so incomplete. And I 100% agree with Larry, and it bothers me that somebody's going to go into USA Today and say, fire him immediately.
Silly.
I can't 100% agree with him, because it is science behind that CTE mm-hmm. thing. And, you know, just playing the game as long as I have, and, you know, dealing with some of the things that you have to deal with after you have a concussion, I understand, you know, that it's real. It's real. I agree with everything he said, but that it's overblown, and you can bend it whichever way you want to. I don't think the NFL would have went this long trying to hide it like they did without it being true science behind it.
You have a problem with
incomplete science, though. True science, but I think it's incomplete science, at least my opinion.
You have a problem with Larry Fedora address bringing up this issue at the media day or...
I'm with you. I think he could have found a different platform to bring it up. But I did, like I said, the only thing I had an issue with was the CTE. I believe like if you look 10 years down the road, I believe the game is going to be different from what it was from now. If you go 10 years, you know, into the past now, it's different now than what it was 10 years ago. So it's definitely going to be a lot different from what it was, you know, then. Right now, what they're doing is they're trying to make the game safer, but in the sense of trying to make the game safer, you're changing a lot of the rules that people like to see. People like to see hard hits. Now, every time you hit somebody, if a guy acts like he's hurt, it's a fine, it's a penalty. And you may not even have hit him illegally in the sense of what they're considered to be illegal right now. It's if the guy looks like he's hurt, let's throw a flag.
The thing that's going on is all this research is fresh. Everything is new. And so I disagree with all three of you guys, honestly, because science has said repeated hits to the head can possibly cause CTE. I didn't play a position where I was susceptible to many hits every single game. Different than you, you got to bang every play. You had to bang every play. A fullback and a middle linebacker, it's a concussion pretty much every play on an isolation play. For me, he's coaching college kids. Their goal is to make it to the NFL. They are going to go balls to the wall every play. And if their coach backs this, what's the repercussions for them? Ball down the middle. When I played this ball down the middle, it was catch the ball, curl up, you know you're going to get hit. Now, ball down the middle, catch the ball, they're probably going to let you take a step or two and they're going to tackle you. His players are going to blow guys up. They're going to light guys up.
And I disagree.
Why wouldn't they? Because their coach is not going to get on. You get a penalty, he's going to outwardly say that's okay. But he's a coach in a meeting. Let's knock they out.
Do you know a coach in football who doesn't want you to blow somebody up?
Every coach does. But because of the science now, you have to change your line of thinking. This just goes back to we're trying to make the game safer. You got a coach like him saying basically the complete opposite. Oh, he was talking in circles. Oh, I'm all for making the game safer, but. Oh, I'm all for doing this, but. What do you believe?
I tend to believe Larry Fedora, to be quite honest with you. I think the CTE thing is exaggerated. And I think
I agree with that. I would agree that it's everybody's different. You said Jerry Kramer, right. 84 years old.
I can't agree it's exaggerated. I mean, you've seen guys that, you know, they've taken their lives and they've studied their head.
But
everybody's not going to react the same. Like, I know, like, guys who smoked cigarettes forever and didn't get cancer.
Thank you.
You know, my dad smoked, he got cancer, and he just couldn't stop, and he died. So each guy is going to react different, but
everybody
it is a link
is different
to it. And it's a great link to it, the same with cancer. I mean, eventually, I mean, if you smoke for 80 years, I don't think you're going to. But some guys, like you said, some guys can do it.
James, here's what I would say. We can't go all the way down this rabbit hole. But I get people smarter than me. And if we had the time here, I could unpack for you things that science has said that now we know was wrong, or now we know was out of context, or now we know was just absolutely made up BS.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, it's not just football. It's boxing. It's soccer.
But
I mean,
all contact sports. Any contact sports, you've got a chance for CTE.
My biggest issue, though, is they don't look at any of the other factors. They don't look at anything else. They don't look at lifestyle. They don't look at, are you working out? Are you physically active? Are you, you know, addicted to opiates?
How many years did you take drugs to play and stay on the field? And what are those drugs doing to your brains? And so none of that is discussed. And so the last point I want to get to here with Fedor, which I actually 1,000% agree with, and I know people were laughing when he said it, when he talks about football being a vital contributor to American society and the success of America. And I 1,000% agree with that. Mm-hmm. And it was like this morning, I didn't know your backstory, James. Mm-hmm. I thought you ended up in the Mid-American Conference at Kent State because you were 6 foot tall. No. I didn't know that you were a problem in high school.
Yeah,
a lot of the big schools.
I self-destructed myself. You know, I was immature. I was young. I did what I wanted to do, what I thought was best.
What other avenue other than football would have came and got that James Harrison and put him on a path to where he could grow up, mature? I don't know if the band was going to do it for you, or an English professor was going to do it for you, or whatever.
It's definitely without football. I'm not where I'm at right now. No.
And so I think the people attacking football either don't care about you, don't care about Mark, don't care about me. Because I was in a one-bedroom apartment with my father in 1984.
I think they're just concerned. And like I said, they're looking at this CTE thing and they're seeing what's happening with guys. And like right now, I'm at a point where I'm letting my kids play contact sports. They're like, why are you letting kids play contact sports? You know, CTE and all this other stuff. I'm not gonna kick my kids away from something that they wanna do. I'm not gonna shelter them. Everything you do in life has a risk. If you walk outside the house, you can get shot by a stray bullet. Something could fall on you. You could die. I'm not gonna have my kids live in fear of what could possibly happen. I'm gonna do everything I can to try and protect them when they play that game and teach them the correct way to do it, but I'm not gonna take it away from it.
We're in a place in our society where there is so much vitriol, there is so much anger, there is so much hate because of race, because of economic status, because of whatever the case may be. And I think this country could learn a hell of a lot by spending some time in a locker room to watch guys who come from different areas of the country, different economic backgrounds, different creeds and different colors and different religions, and actually sacrifice for one another and love one another. And I think a lot can be learned based on a locker room. So I happen to agree with Coach that there's a lot of great things that you learn. You learn far more, like I said, I've learned far more, and the game has given me far more than it's ever taken.
We're not talking about what you learn from him. We're talking about his opinion of they're changing the game. No, they're changing them. Get to your point. I'm gonna tell a quick story. Like my wife's grandmother, she had cancer. She went through chemotherapy, radiation. They thought it was gone. It comes back. They gave her 2 months to live. And I was probably in my fourth or fifth year, and she says to me, if I make it till September, I'm not dying before January, because she looked forward to every Sunday. She was like, if I can make it till September, I will not die before January. She made it to September, and then she passed away the following June. But they gave her 2 months to live, and she lived 10 months because she looked forward to every Sunday to watching me play. And it's what you said, football is very vital to what we do in America. I'm a football fan. I try to watch every game. I recognize every player. I speak to football for what is giving me everything. Without football, I don't know where I would be.
And that's, again, why Larry Fedor is so defensive about football and thinks the attack is unfair. And that's why I agree with
him. I mean, we've seen people play with leather helmets and no face masks. So the game is always going to change. And they think they're making it change for the better. We just don't know now.
I think his concern, though, is, and it's my position, without risk, there's no reward. Mm-hmm. And so all this trying to eliminate all the risk from football, rather than football. And this is where I question and want the commissioner of the NFL and everybody involved with football to get more where Larry Fedora is. I'm not going to apologize that this game is violent and dangerous. It is. Everybody that gets involved knows. They know what the rewards are. This isn't the 1960s and 70s. It's not even 1986 or 87 when you got in and got paid $45,000 a year. James Harrison played at a time when you could make generational wealth and change your family for a significant period of time. It's worth the risk.
Let's be
honest, we need to quit apologizing.
The reason the changes in the game and the health is a priority is because of the lawsuit that was brought against the NFL. So they saw that lawsuit and said, we got to get at the forefront of this. That's why all these changes are being enacted now, because of the lawsuit that was brought against the league, and they stood to lose.
Hey, now that the cat's out of the bag and everybody knows, okay, I'm with you. Hey, this is a dangerous game. And there's only 1,700 people in the world that are physically gifted enough, that have been touched by the hand of God, and are slightly twisted enough to actually play it. And you know what? If you can't play it, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Right? Sure. I'm sorry that you weren't gifted enough and you weren't crazy enough to play it. And we move on. And that's one of the things I love being in a game. I love being on the sideline and watching it. And I watch the guys play and I'm like, dude, these guys are crazy. I can't even believe that I played. But when you're in it, you're just in it, right?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, once that time comes where you don't feel like the risk is worth the reward, then you walk away from it.
You do a poll of guys that played at least 6 years, 99% would probably say they'd do it again.
Sure.
Because it's that fun, and the reward outweighs the risk.
Sure.
It does.
Yeah, I obviously never made it out of being a mediocre Mid-American Conference player. I would love to do it all over again.
If y'all had come across each other, maybe you could have made your point again.
He wouldn't have been able
to play. I'd have got drafted in the first round I came across him.
All right, welcome back. James Harrison, Mark Schlereth, and TJ Housmanzada are back. Let's stay in the NFL, where the league's new anthem policy may be causing more problems than it solves. Not only has the NFLPA filed a grievance over the new rule, now one player, Tennessee's Jarrell Casey, says he will continue to protest in spite of the consequences, saying, quote, I'm going to take my fine. The Titans, for their part, said today they want to discuss the issue with Casey to make sure he understands that under the new rule, teams get fined, not players. All right, I got a couple thoughts here. One, Jarrell Casey is trying to build Jarrell Casey's brand. That's why I think he's saying this. It's a way to attract attention for Jarrell Casey. But the discussion I want to have is, I don't understand why Jarrell Casey and current players can't figure out they need to be doing what's in the best interest of the NFL. The more money the NFL makes, the more money players make. And I get that Twitter has convinced everybody that NFL Sundays and NFL stadiums are the perfect place to protest the police. I think the perfect place to protest the police is at City Hall. That's where their bosses are at. The politicians, the mayor, the city council. That's where you protest the police. They're messing up their business by doing this in the NFL stadiums and irritating the customer base. I don't understand why NFL players can't get into the mindset of, let's do what's best for my business. The more money I make, the more money I can invest in the causes I believe in.
I think the reason is, and it starts at the top, if you look at the way the NFL, this is the most Teflon league there is. And you look at the way that they behave themselves, right? Anything that comes out that's negative, there's a knee-jerk reaction and we change a rule. We do something. The president criticizes the National Football League, the owners get together and they say, here's our new anthem policy. And the issue is that James Casey looks at it and the Players Association look at it and say, wait, aren't we supposed to be in this thing together? And there's such vitriol between the two sides that they're so concerned about being right as opposed to doing what's right. You're 100% correct. You continue to protest, you know what? The TV ratings keep going down. That's where you make the majority of your money as an organization. The TV ratings keep going down. Guess who it directly affects? Directly affects the players. And you've got a very short time to earn your living. And so You know, the biggest issue that we have here between a players association and between the league is that there is no connectivity. I mean, we are at odds with one another, and if we could just come together at some point and have a discussion and say, hey, you know what's best for us is to build the brand of the NFL, and guess what? You guys are going to make a lion's share of the profit. But they don't do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't kind of agree with that. I think a lot of the guys, I agree with it to a point, but I don't think they look that far ahead. I don't think they're thinking that far ahead. You got to realize it's a young
sure.
game. It's a bunch of young guys. So right now it's mano y mano. I'm going to show you I'm going to do what I want to do because that's what I want to do. I feel like that's the right thing to do, and it's nothing that you're going to stop me from doing that. And they don't look at the far-reaching repercussions of it. And to some guys, like he said, he's just going to take the fine. He feels like
he's not going to get fined.
Well, that's something they could pass down to him.
And that's why they put out that statement saying
so you're not going to continue to take a fine for something that, you know, they done, like you said, implemented a rule that they really didn't need to. You know, it's rules at all jobs, whether you agree with it or not. You know, pilots, they can't drink for like 48 hours before they fly. If they do, they lose their job. That's just a rule. So at some point in time, you're going to have to, line up with what the rules is of where your job is at. And if it's not worth it for you, then you're going to get fined. And at some point, those fines are going to, you know, get to the point to where, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and get in line.
He hasn't thought this through. I'm actually kind of tired of guys saying, I'm going to do this now, I'm going to do that now. I'm going to help him out. If he protests every week, he's probably going to get a minimum of $20,000 fine every week. 20 times 16, that's 320 grand. Just go ahead and put 200 grand. I'm going to save him 120,000. Put 200 grand aside. He's from out here. He went to Long Beach Poly High School, helped inner city kids in Long Beach with that money. If you're willing to take the fine, just go ahead. I'm going to save you 120 grand. Put 200,000 to the side and help the inner city kids that are in the same position that you were once in. Instead of saying, I'm going to take this fine, let's do something with this money, because I don't think these guys realize it's what you don't think that far through. I wasn't fined a lot, but when I was, when you're done playing, you don't have them checks coming in, you're like, man, I sure could use this money that they fined me for. And so think these things through. It's what you're young. You're not really worried about that.
Yeah, you could go out in the community and take that money and get involved with things that are, you know, educational as far as trying to get the community to understand.
Educate the police, get the police to understand.
Get the police to understand the inner city community and get a talking, a communication together to make it better, to try and make it better. I mean, because it's not going to change overnight.
Okay, James, you're 39, 40 years old. You just left an NFL locker room. Mm-hmm. Everything you're saying, as a veteran player, is it impossible for you or other veterans to get that message across to the younger players?
You could talk to guys until you're blue in the face. You know, it's up. Like I said, it's just young. Like, that's what they want to do right now. They want to keep them young.
And he's a vet, though.
Young,
he's not
right?
young.
He's 28 years old.
You know, that's still young when you think
eight
about it. You know what I'm saying? You got all this money. You're 28 years old. You think everything is about you. You've been catered to your whole life. And now you're getting to a point to where they're trying to tell me, I can't do this, I can't do that. And this is what I want to do. So it's just, you know, rebelling. Like, even when all the guys at the National and we stood inside the locker room and, you know, everybody felt like they needed to react because of what Trump had said. And we didn't. We did something that we wouldn't have normally did if he hadn't said something. So we reacted to something that we didn't need to react to. Like, we could have just went out there and did what we normally did. So we came to an agreement and we thought we were just going to stand inside the tunnel, and when it was done, we'd walk out. We were trying to remove ourselves from the situation. And what we ended up doing is it got clustered, and you had guys standing here, you had coaches out there, and it made everybody look bad.
You make a hell of a point, man, in terms of, and I try to say it to people all the time, the actions of some random idiot shouldn't dictate your actions. Because if you're really that easy, so some idiot can control what you're doing, rather you being in control of yourself. It just seems very simple and to me, and I think, TJ, you hit a hell of a point. And again, let's be clear here. The NFL is going to fine teams, not players. But this guy saying, I'll take a fine and blah, blah, blah. Rather than give the NFL that money, why not use it right here in the community to help some people? That would be better than a gesture. Because these gestures during the game, they're not being received the way the players think that they are. That they were, oh, this is bringing attention to police brutality. No, it's bringing attention to the national anthem controversy. All right, welcome back. James Harrison, Mark Schlereth, and TJ Houssman-Zada are back. We'll have more on T.O. in a minute, but first, let's move to Pittsburgh, where Antonio Brown says that whenever Le'Veon Bell ends his holdout, the team will welcome him back with open arms, and he'll have a great year. Bell has made it clear he wants to be paid like Brown is, somewhere around $17 million a year, but he's already making nearly twice what the next highest paid running back gets. All right, we got a Pittsburgh expert here. James, you know this team as well as anyone. Is Le'Veon Bell just as valuable as Antonio Brown?
I feel like it's a close comparison. If not as valuable, just right there below him. Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the NFL. There's no question about that. But he also gives you 70, 80 receptions a year. You got receivers that aren't getting that a year, and they're number ones at other teams. So for him to want the money that he wants, I understand. I think they should pay him.
You said maybe just a cut below. I think Le'Veon Bell is more valuable than Antonio Brown.
I think Antonio is more valuable because it's more passing now, and Antonio is the best receiver in the NFL. The man is over 100 catches a year. And you know, it's a passing league now. He has better hands than Bell. So I feel like AB is more valuable. If not right under him, then Bell is because of the passing league we're in.
See, I look at it like what he does to give you one-on-one matchups, what he does in the backfield, also splitting out, catching the ball. I think Le'Veon Bell, to me, and I'm with you 100%. I think they're close, but I give the edge to Le'Veon Bell. Let me just digress for a second. If I was him, this would be my last year in Pittsburgh, and I would be pissed off. Straight up, because you throw out there $70 million, five-year $70 million deal. Like, you've offered him a great contract, and you make players look bad. When they deny it, when they say, I'm not going to take that, $10 million of it guaranteed. You're going to make $14.5 million guaranteed just showing up and signing your franchise tag. So it just irritates the snot out of me when you throw out these fake Monopoly numbers and then the player gets pressure from the fans like, oh, that greedy, you know, why didn't he sign here? This is ridiculous. I just hate the fact that teams do that. And if I was him, I'd be irritated with that offer. I mean, it would... I digress again, but it would just irritate me.
Like
I
said, you're right. Oh, go ahead.
Well, to that point, I think they want to pay Le'Veon, but I think it just got to a point to where they couldn't make the numbers match. You know, they spent a lot of money in their offensive line. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben is getting paid. AB is getting paid. They just spent some money with Tua and Cam. And I feel like they just actually don't have the money to be able to give him what he deserves.
I'm shocked to hear him say
they have the money. They always have the money if they want to. To me, it's a push. We said the other day, this dude is a monster. Like, he's that good of a player. He's getting over 400 touches every year, and when he does, he's doing things that we've never seen done by a running back consistently, year after year after year. I'm with you. The good thing about they put reportedly offered him $70 million. The good thing about today's age, we got social media. You can get on right now and refute that. So now they see that. Back then it was, oh, they offered him this. Everybody's mad at the player. Now his agent himself, he can get on social media. Oh, this is a lie. This is what I was offered. And right. So the blowback is not as bad as it would have been years ago. To me, Le'Veon Bell, I'm with you. I'm done with the Steelers. I'm going to the highest bidder, and it is what it is, because you've shown me you don't value me. You've shown me that I don't mean as much as I thought I meant to this organization and this team.
There's always guys you can go back to and say, hey, Big Ben, what we're going to do is give you a bunch of upfront money. We're going to spread it out, and you know what? You just said you're going to play till you're 40. There's always
so
guys.
Load their contracts, though, that, you know, at the end of it, you got a guy that may be making $8 or $9 million, but he's hitting the cap for like 17 or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think they backload their contracts so much that I really believe, I hope they've gotten to it, because I see him worth
every
penny.
You're not playing anymore. They got all kinds of freed up money.
No, money.
I'm sitting here shocked that as linebacker, defensive lineman, a running back that touches the ball 400 times a season versus a receiver that touches it 120 times,
He caused coverage problems, man. You need two people on AB at all times. And that's the same thing. Like, if you
but
don't have Le'Veon back there,
backfield,
then you don't
sure
have to,
two people.
You don't have to load the box. You got Le'Veon in the backfield, you got to load the box. If you spread Le'Veon out, you got a matchup problem with a linebacker. I don't know if it's a linebacker. It's not a linebacker in the NFL that can cover him
one-on-one. It's probably not a safety in the league that can cover him one-on-one.
So that's – you got it. You got to find a way.
We'll move to Terrell Owens, who showed up at the ESPYs last night and had a lot to say about the controversy over his decision not to show up for his Hall of Fame induction ceremony, insisting it wasn't as big a deal as everyone made it out to be.
I think everybody's obviously wondering, you know, what went into my decision. And I think, you know, John Wooden said it best, like, be more concerned about your character than your reputation. And I think what the noise is right now is really more about my reputation than my actual character. You know, they're making the narrative more so about me offending the Hall of Famers, that has nothing to do with it. I respect all those Hall of Famers that have gone in before me and going in with me and after me. So it has nothing to do with those Hall of Famers.
All right. T.O. actually, throughout this interview, sounded good. But when you dive into what he actually said, they're just words in terms of, hey, I respect the other Hall of Famers. Well, are your actions consistent with that? And that's where I think he falls short. If he goes to the Hall of Fame like everybody else, there's not this controversy about him being the first inductee ever to no-show the Hall of Fame. That's a story. That you can't put that on the media. That is T.O. driving that story. He wants to be different. He wants to do things that's never been done. He wants to do things other teammates don't do. He was a bad teammate in the NFL. He's a bad teammate as a Hall of Famer.
I would just say this. You look at the actions and you say no disrespect intended. You may not have intended disrespect, but you're disrespecting the folks that are there, and the folks that come after. You mentioned it, and I think it was Michael Irvin that said it, that you're making it harder for the next guy that's going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame that has some history behind him that maybe it isn't congruent with being a great teammate. And the voters are the ones that get you in, and the voters be like, let's not pull another T.O. here and let a guy in that doesn't truly respect the awesome honor that it is to be a Pro Football Hall of Famer. So you may not have intended disrespect, but you're disrespecting the guys that are there, the guys that are coming after.
I think that's how you feel, because like you said, he may have not intended disrespect, but that's how he feels. That's like the protests. Guys didn't mean disrespect on the anthem,
sure,
but that's how people feel. So I'm with him. I don't see it being a big deal that he wants to go.
You're going into the Hall of Fame. If you don't go first ballot, you still going? Would you be offended?
Nah. It was third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth.
I want to get in there.
I want to get in there.
Now, I'll be honest, as a Hall of Fame voter, which I'm not, but if I were, you know, when James went to New England like that, that would be a point against it.
That's a point against it?
Wow. I mean, for T.O., it's everything he says, you have to believe him because he's been so on. Your point was, you think T.O. cares about the next guy behind him? He's doing what he feel is best for himself. And so he's thinking about the next guy once he's done handling what he has to do with himself. He's not worried about, oh, I'm messing it up for the next guy. I feel I've been wronged. I'm gonna stand up for myself. I'm not gonna let y'all do me like this. There's three receivers in the history of the league that everybody knows were the best three. It's Jerry Rice, it's Randy Moss, and it's Terrell Owens. Two of those guys were first ballot. Something's not right. You can get on the writers. It's not the Hall of Fame's fault. It's the writer's fault. Something is not right. He should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer because he's that good.
Again, I've said it many, many times. There's only one Hall of Famer in the history that's been booted off five or six teams, and that's Terrell Owens. And so he's got to
but
live with that as well.
But your point is he's been booted off how many teams?
Five or six teams.
And another team welcomes him with open arms. Come on, baby. Let's go. We'll take you in.
Hall of Famers don't get kicked to the curb. You
know, he got picked back up, though.
Real quick.
Hall of Famers don't get kicked to the curb.
He got picked back up, though.
Okay, but I think you have to understand, you have to be mature enough and grown up enough to understand that your actions during the course of your career are going to affect the way people perceive you.
Right.
Perception becomes reality. And if your perception is you're a turd, guess what? The voters are going to essentially.
And that's why he's doing what he wants to do, to say, okay, this is how you're going to do, this is what I'm going to do.
Okay, but TJ, it's your whole point that he's not worried about the guy behind him. Everything that you're taught in team sports is don't do anything to hurt your teammates or hurt the guys you're playing with. Don't screw it up for everybody else. And that's always been T.O.'s thing. And that's why I didn't have a problem with the guy. And he does have the numbers. And as a player, he was dominant. He's a Hall of Fame player. He's not a Hall of Fame teammate. I wouldn't let him in the Hall of Fame. All right, welcome back. We're joined now by NBA champion Antonio Daniels and the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to the NBA, where reportedly the Thunder just traded Carmelo Anthony and a 2022 protected first-round pick to the Atlanta Hawks for Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala. Melo is now expected to be waived by Atlanta, and the Rockets are the front runner to sign him. All right, I actually love this move for the OKC Thunder. I think this is an indication. Schroeder, 19-6 last year, a decent shooter, can finish at the rim. I think this is an indication that Russell Westbrook is going to spend some time off the ball and play a bit of a different style. They're getting rid of a problem in Carmelo and getting a 24-year-old point guard that can help. Love this move for OKC.
As do I. And I love it. I think it's a complete win-win for OKC. Number one, you just mentioned Schroeder has starting point guard numbers, 19-6. Okay, you can make the argument that's on a bad team, but now you transfer or translate that to a good team, maybe you're getting 12-4 off your bench from him. That's one win. 24 years old. The second part is you're saving $100 million in taxes. So this is a win-win for Oklahoma City and Sam Presti.
I got to say, Antonio, didn't they try this Dennis Schroeder move a couple years ago with Reggie Jackson in OKC? They had Reggie Jackson kind of play point guard a little bit. They shifted Russ off. It didn't work. And now you're bringing in a guy, Schroeder, 24 years old, shot 29% from three last year. A bit of a, you know, personality in the locker room. He's feuded with some players before. I think it's a high-risk move, but again, Whitlock makes a good point. Like, listen, the West seems to be wide open after the Warriors. You add 19-6, there's a chance. I mean, McIntyre, are they better than the Rockets now? Are they?
I potentially, but McIntyre, I think what you may be underestimating is I think Paul George's decision to stay is based on Russell Westbrook promising, I'm going to adjust my style of play. I think he and Paul George have talked about this. The team's going to get rid of Carmelo. We're going to play a little bit differently. I think we can't judge it based off what happened in the past with Reggie Jackson and Russell Westbrook. I think this is a great win for OKC.
Well, the difference between Reggie Jackson and Dennis Schroeder, the difference in situations is, one, Reggie Jackson had never had his own team.
Yes.
So when he went to Oklahoma City, he was drafted by Oklahoma City, and he felt like he needed his own team or that he could run his own team. Dennis Schroeder now was in a position to have his own team. Okay, he's been there. He's done that. Now you're coming from a subpar team in the Atlanta Hawks and coming to a contending team. Yeah, you're going to adjust your attitude, one, and you're going to adjust your game, two. But also, if you look at the way that the NBA is being structured now, the way teams are being built, you want to put five guys on the floor that can run, pass, shoot, defend with high basketball IQs. So that's why you bring in a guy like Dennis Schroeder, because if you have to move Russell Westbrook to the two spot, you can. Move Paul George to the three or four, you can.
Flexibility is a good
and
thing.
Versatility.
All right, so let me push back a little bit. So, you know, listen, Schroeder went from being the number one option. Now he's going to be clearly number three, right, behind Russell Westbrook and Paul George.
Or number four.
Steven Adams. I forgot your boy, Steven Adams. So let me just say, Russell Westbrook led the NBA in time of possession last year. He has the ball in his hands all the time and in touches, more than Ben Simmons, more than LeBron, anyone. I just wonder how difficult is it going to be for him to come off the ball all of a sudden, even if it's for 15, 20 minutes a night. Guy averaged a triple-double the last two seasons. Is he suddenly going
to
step back and say, okay, I'll play on the wing?
If they couldn't win that way, I think he has to make that adjustment quickly. Carmelo Anthony is being moved to Houston. I don't know if they're going to have chemotherapy there in Houston for it, but I don't see how this helps the Houston Rockets.
I do. And we just had the discussion.
Yes, we did talk.
Honestly, I feel like if he went to Houston or if he went to L.A., both of those teams offer him something that no one else can offer and that Oklahoma City can offer him. And that's a relationship. Meaning, he has a relationship with LeBron James. He has a relationship with Chris Paul. If me and Chris Paul sit down and he tells me, hey, look, Melo, it's best for our team if you come off the bench. We were one game removed. We're one game removed from going to the NBA Finals. Because of the relationship that they have with one another, Melo's going to listen to that. If he goes to L.A. and he has a sit-down with LeBron James, it's different when you have a relationship with guys as opposed to hearing it from a GM.
Please keep him away from the Lakers. But listen, I love the optimism. I do want to say Mike D'Antoni and Carmelo Anthony had major beef in New York.
For sure.
Feuded for over a year. It was ugly. It didn't work out there, and now it's going to work out with him coming off the bench all of a sudden.
This is not the same thing, though. Okay. In New York, that whole offensive system was based around Carmelo Anthony. It was based around Carmelo. You come to Houston, you're the third option. You're not asked.
I'm sure he's going
to
love that.
Asked,
right?
I'm just saying.
Third option.
Asked to run, they're not going to be asked to run their offense through Carmelo Anthony. They have two guys in Chris Paul and James Harden that they can run their offense.
Good luck, Houston. We got a problem.
He's your problem.
All right, welcome back. James Harrison is here for Last Call. James, I want to take you a little bit down memory lane. I want to show you a picture. James was a great player in the Mid-American Conference. You know, a few years before me, but you know what you're looking at right there, James?
What's that?
That's your worst nightmare, looking at you right. That's 290 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal.
Oh.
That's one of the greatest players to ever play in the Mid-American Conference. And had he not been 10 years older than you, probably someone that would have destroyed your career.
I told you, you'd have been somebody that would have accelerated my career.
You know what my nickname was at Ball State?
What's that?
6 foot John Ogden. That's what they called me at
John
Ball
Ogden.
State. Yeah, Jonathan Ogden. They called me.
How old was John Ogden then? He had to be what? 12?
He was 14. We had a very good scouting department.
Oh.
That recognized he was going to be an all-time great.
Okay.
He was going to be an all-time. But I was talking to a former teammate of yours, a good friend of mine, Jose Davis.
Yeah.
Sharing some story. He told me he once tried to knock you over.
Yeah.
And fell head over feet first trying to knock you over. You tripped him. And he tried to knock you over. One of the greatest players of all time. James, I've been dying to ask you this. I need someone to tell me. Bill Belichick did the dumbest thing in Super Bowl history, not playing Malcolm Butler. Yes or no?
No. I think at the time it was, you know, their opinion that he wasn't playing up to par from the practices. Now, looking at it now, yeah. I don't think it was too smart. We could have used him. I mean, we weren't doing too well, you know, to begin with. I would at least probably tried to throw him in at halftime, you know.
All right, give me this then. I've argued all summer, all offseason. He needs to explain the decision to Tom Brady and the rest of the team. Yes or no?
No, he's the head coach. He don't have to explain the decision to anybody.
Bill Belichick doesn't owe the play. In the biggest game, you sit down one of your greatest playmakers.
Your head coach is beyond question, you know. I mean, if he wants to explain his reasoning, he can, but you don't have to.
Your head coach is beyond question. Would you say the same thing about Mike Tomlin?
Beyond question. You can, you know, his decision is final. You know, he's the head coach.
So when Mike Tomlin wasn't playing James Harrison, question it?
Of course I questioned it, but his decision is final. I can't do anything about it. Obviously, I tried to orchestrate my release, which didn't happen until they needed the space and, you know, ended up going to New England.
Do you regret leaving Pittsburgh?
No. For me to continue to play, my big thing is I wanted to play. I wanted to get on the field. And for me to continue to play, I had to go somewhere else, and that was relevant. That was, you know, evident.